Hello there.
Welcome to another episode of Turkey Book Talk. I'm William Armstrong, speaking to you from here in Istanbul. In this podcast, I speak to authors about newly released books on Turkey and its neighbourhood. Subscribe through iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher or Acast. Like the Facebook page or follow the Twitter account at Turkey Book Talk. And check out show notes and other links at armstrongwilliam.wordpress.com. If you're a fan, you can directly support this podcast by taking advantage of a special offer for Turkey Book Talk listeners, courtesy of Hearst Publishers. In that deal, you can get a 33% discount plus free delivery on any one of five great books published by Hearst. Check it out via the special address created for the deal, hearstpublishers.bigcartel.com. That's hearstpublishers.bigcartel.com. Purchasing through that deal is cheaper than Amazon, and it helps support this podcast. Titles included on the list are written by authors who have featured on previous episodes of Turkey Book Talk. They include The Circassian, A Life of Eşref Bey, Late Ottoman Insurgent and Special Agent by Benjamin Fortner, The New Turkey and Its Discontents by Simon Waldman and Emre Çalışkan, The Poison Well, Empire and Its Legacy in the Middle East by Roger Hardy, Out of Nowhere, The Syrian Kurds in Peace and War by Michael Gunter, and Jihad and Death, The Global Appeal of Islamic State by Olivier Roy. To order any of those titles, visit hearstpublishers.bigcartel.com, where all the books are listed with a third knocked off their original price. Alternatively, if you enjoy or benefit from this podcast, consider supporting it through my Patreon account, which lets you make a small or large pledge on a per episode basis. The standard pledge is $3 per episode, but you can contribute as much or as little as you want. You can check out details and links to that Patreon account through all the Turkey Book Talk pages. But now let's crack on with this latest episode. In it, I speak to Laura Sarı, who's an editor at Aras Yayıncılık, or Aras Publishing House, which was established back in 1993 as a window onto Armenian literature. It has so far published 200 books from its offices in Istanbul, including Turkish language books translated into Armenian and Armenian books translated into Turkish. The books are from contemporary authors as well as voices from the past, including texts from the Ottoman era, memoirs, novels, all kinds of things really. And if you're a reader of either Armenian or Turkish, I would strongly urge you to check out its catalogue, because there are some absolutely fascinating titles in there, as we discuss in this conversation. This year, Aras published its first English language title, Migadich Margosyan's Gavul Mahallesi, or Infidel Quarter. The book was first written in Armenian in 1988, before being translated into Turkish in 1992 and Kurdish in 1999. It's a charming, poignant collection of 11 stories and autobiographical reflections from Margosyan, who grew up as one of the few remaining Armenians in the southeastern city of Diyarbakır in the 1940s and 50s. We talk about that book later in the conversation, as well as Aras's general mission and some of the difficulties it's experienced in the turbulent world of Istanbul publishing, both business and political. Laura Sarı spoke to me shortly after attending this year's International Istanbul Book Fair, and I started by asking her how that went for them.
I should say, I think among the publishers, what we see the most is people tend to buy less books or they find the books expensive. And it's actually right, they're expensive because our books, for example, our translated books have lots to do with currency because we buy the copyrights from United States or Britain. So we have to make them more expensive than they used to be. And with the economical crisis, even though books are not as expensive as it is in Western countries, people started seeing books as a luxury item. So all of our publishers, our friends, they were all complaining about how they cannot sell many books this year. As you also heard, there was this one, I think I was not there, I haven't seen it, but there was an attack. So of course, these kind of things worry other publishers about basically about freedom of speech, and you don't really know if they would attack you for something irrational one day too. But as an Armenian publisher, I think we always have this in mind, sort of. We never really experienced anything, but sometimes people look to our books, of course, and they would just like nod their heads or give us a little, you know, sometimes those things happen, but usually our readers are very friendly. People are friendly there. I think we left there again very tired and happy. I can say that. We were happy. We just had a meeting today and we were happy about how it went. I think the fair is kind of a resolution of a year, because you publish all those books and then you go there and they kind of reflect your year too. And when we were at the fair, I think when we looked at our 24 new books, we're four editors, so like publishing 24 books in a year is a really big thing for us, so we were actually proud of ourselves, we can say that.
Apparently there was record attendance this year, or am I just paying too much attention to spin there?
Yeah, they say that, but you don't really understand sometimes why those people are there. I think some people come there instead of their going to mall. They will be like, oh, there's this book fair. Let's just go and see what's going on. Or I think last weekend there was like Jamie Yılmaz, and I think so many people attended to see him. The numbers doesn't really reflect the actual book lovers. That never. It was like that 2 years ago too, though. I don't think it has nothing to do with the current situation or anything. I don't know if this is happening in another country, but people just like to walk around in book fairs here. It's interesting.
Now just moving on to Arras, really. It was established 25 years ago in 1993 in Istanbul. Yeah. I wonder if you could just kind of describe a bit what the history and the motivation really behind Arras is and the work it does. Obviously, I presume you haven't personally worked there for that whole time, but could you just kind of describe what Arras was setting out to achieve when it started up until this point?
The people who were in the establishment process are very important names in the Istanbul Armenian community. The most famous of them would be Hrant Dink, but also other people, Yetvar Tolmasyan, for example, who are still with us and his basically our everything, and many other names who that time were the pioneers of Armenian intellectual sphere. The reason, I think they have many motivations, but of course, the first one that comes to mind is to introduce Armenian literature to non-Armenians, people who don't speak Armenian. But of course, first thing to come to mind is non-Armenians, but it's also Armenians who forgot Armenian, who can't speak Armenian. And the number is actually huge. Of course, this has a historical background, but even my parents, they don't speak Armenian. I forgot Armenian as I was growing up. I went to Armenian school for 8 years through elementary. And then in high school, I was in another school and I forgot Armenian. And so these people who established Arras, they had two things in mind, basically. Introduce Armenian literature to non-Armenians and connect Armenians again with their own culture. And for example, Agos, the reason why Agos was established is actually
the newspaper that was established in the 90s.
Yeah, the reason why Agos was established again, there were only like two newspapers for Armenians, and they're like basically four-paged newspapers. They're still published today, but they're all only in Armenian. So people who established Arras was also worried about Armenians who cannot learn about their churches, school situation, learn about their community in a language that they understand. So as they established Arras, a group of people like Hrant Dink, they just like decided to also establish a newspaper that is in Armenian and also in Turkish, mainly in Turkish with Armenian pages. And this is actually what we do too. We actually had or about to have our 200th book, and one third of our books are in Armenian and the rest is in Turkish. If we're about to publish a novel, both in the same novel in Armenian and in Turkish, we always publish first the original Armenian book, and then the translated version, because we know that Armenian readers would prefer reading the Turkish one because it's faster. And we call Armenian our mother tongue, but actually Turkish is our mother tongue. So
I wonder if there's been any kind of trend. I have no idea, but has there been any trend at all towards people kind of learning Armenian at all in recent years, or has it been the opposite?
You mean among non-Armenians?
Among Armenians, kind of relearning the mother tongue in a way.
I don't think so, actually. I doubt that. I mean, I look around and I don't see anything like that. I don't want to speak for everyone.
Yeah.
But maybe a little number because of there is an Armenian course at the Hrant Dink Foundation. But it's just for beginners. And I know a couple people who attend to those course because they forgot Armenian as I did. So they want to go back. But other than that, it's not very possible because Armenian kids grow up, they're taught that Armenian is not a necessary language, that there is like no country that they would be using that language. I mean, you can't even, we talk Western Armenian and it's really hard to communicate with the Armenians in Armenia who speak Eastern Armenian. I mean, we can communicate, of course, but only the ones who speak really good Armenian are like fluent or they can understand what they say. But other than that, it's really hard to communicate with them. So the parents usually have this tendency to teach their kids, like, it's better to learn English or German or French. Armenian, you're not gonna need that in life. So I don't think a kid growing up with this idea would end up feeling that they need to get better in Armenian. They don't actually. I mean, in schools, in Armenian schools, kids talk Turkish. I mean, it's very understandable, by the way. This is the current of life, but Armenians don't really feel this necessity to speak Armenian. And I mean, that's why Western Armenian is actually an endangered language. So.
Now, going back to Aras, I was just looking at the website, okay. Actually, and it's really striking how there's so many different kind of genres that you're publishing. You know, you've got kind of straight up almost academic titles, but there's also novels, memoirs. There are old novels that were kind of published decades ago and then almost forgotten about, but have now been kind of rediscovered, retranslated and published in the kind of present day context. Are there any particular titles that kind of stand out for you or that you're especially happy to have worked on as an editor, or any particular recommendations really to Turkish or Armenian language readers?
I think we have this perspective, we have this priority to, when we read something in Armenian, we always think like it's pity that people can't read this in Turkish because it's such a good novel. The literature is amazing. So we tend to translate them. And we know that it's both sides, that some Armenians have prejudices against Turkish people and vice versa. So when there is a novel that we are sure that's going to bring them together, we're like, people have to read this book. Both sides have to read this book and see what they need to see. For example, one of our beloved writers, Zabalye Sayan, she's one of the first feminist writers in the history of Turkey. And her books, people love her. So we understand why. And we try to present, even though they are Armenians, we try to present those writers, of course, as writers from Turkey, as writers from this land. And that's why Turkish readers, non-Armenians, love those writers too, because they can connect with their stories. That's our priority. But other than that, we give great importance to children's books. They're all in Armenian, but the Armenian schools are great help in Armenian schools. So we give importance to that. Yeah.
I wasn't aware that you were publishing Zabo. Yes, I am, actually. I read a couple of years ago, I reviewed The Gardens of Silidar. Have you published that at Aras in Turkish? Or?
It's coming soon.
Oh, really?
We have...
The Gardens of Silidar is this kind of extraordinary short memoir, or the version that I read was short. It was kind of an edited one. It's a memoir of her growing up really in the late 19th century in Istanbul. And
yeah.
It's really a vanished world that she's describing.
Yeah, like in Silahtar, or for example, we just published Istanbul Anıları, which is also like a vanished memoir from Istanbul throughout at the end of 19th century, from 1897 to 1940, which tells the nearly end of Ottoman Empire and then after the Republic was established. So it's a great testimony. It's a great book. Zabalye Sayan does the same. And I don't think they have like lots difference. In Mansuri's book, you read all these other writers, like non-Armenians, Turkish, and how they get together and work together. And they describe this world of working together from all ethnicities, no matter who. And we kind of don't have this anymore. I'm speaking of from the Armenians side, because there are not so many living Armenians writers right now. We know Mugurditch Margosyan or Karin Karakashlı, but other than that, we don't hear any Armenian writers sitting together with Orhan Pamuk somewhere and they're like creating together. That world is like long gone. So it's also very interesting to read about those memoirs too, because for example, Zaber Yesen was a very important figure in the literature world in our time. So yeah, we like publishing Zabel or Zaben Bibayan or Hagop Munsurian, all those great Armenian writers in Turkish.
Silidar was it was an old neighborhood in Üsküdar, and I actually went there a couple of years ago, and it's completely obviously different. It's completely unrecognizable now. I think there's one street with the name. It's kind of a chilling reminder, really. It's
you'll get that feeling when we read. I have a great feeling of nostalgia towards the beginning of 20th century Istanbul. All the novelists lived around that time were great novelists. So whenever we read something in that period, it just gives a great nostalgia feeling. I love that too.
You so we're talking there. You're primarily publishing in Turkish and Armenian, but you've just this year published the first book as Aras in English, as an English translation, and it's Migadic Margosyan's Gavur Mahallesi, which is Infidel Quarter. I think that was published back in June this year, and it's this kind of very unique memoir really about Margosyan's life as an Armenian growing up in Diyarbakir in the 1930s and 40s. I just read this book and was very taken by it. It's kind of a very slim read. I just wonder if you could kind of introduce this book to listeners and talk about whether there's any particular reason why you chose it as your first English title to publish at Aras.
I must admit it wasn't planned. So Gavur Mahallesi is, I think, I'm sorry if I'm wrong, but I think it's our first Turkish book. And to this day, it's the most sold one. I think we did its 20th print run, if I'm not wrong.
But how many individual items is that?
30,000. I guess. Yeah. It's a really big number for us, but it never gets old. And every time, even this year too, Margosyan had like, he gave out signatures on 4 days, last Saturday, Sunday, and this Saturday, Sunday too. And it was lines all the time. People were waiting for him. Crazy. People love him really. But the reason we didn't actually choose it, our partner in this book, Gomidas Institute, which is in London, they wanted to publish this book. And they wanted to buy the rights, but we said, how about you just like, don't pay us anything for the rights, but we just make a we work on this together and you guys do the translation and we just publish it together. So it was their plan and we just kind of like stepped into it. So this is the reason why. But I think if we decided to publish a book in English, I think we would still choose this book because it's our bestseller. It's our Migadic Margosyan. It's so great to have him because he's alive, he's with us, he's still creating, writing. He's one of the founders of the publishing house too, by the way. And as I said before, as in Gavur Mahallesi, he describes this life of his with his neighbors, and he tells a story from his childhood, and it's like Turkish and Kurdish people and Syrian people, and they live together in this little neighborhood. And the story of Gavur Mahallesi, of course, goes way back to 1915, but I think it always attracts people to listen to the story of these people like living a poor little life, but actually Margosyan is like has this very funny pen, if I should say, like he writes it with like a great humor. I think it's his being a warm, humorous person just attracts many people from every community, Armenians, Turkish, Kurdish people. I know it's a cliche thing to say, but they all find something from their life in Margosyan's story. And it doesn't really romanticize it or anything. He just tells it as it is. He doesn't try making people make people cry or anything, or make people deliberately laugh trying to be funny. He doesn't do all of that. It's just being himself. And when people meet him in person, they see that actually. I don't know. Why did you like it? I understand why Turkish people or people from Turkey like it, but like, what was the reason?
I don't know. Like you mentioned there, it's very funny. I think the humor does come through in the translation.
And, oh, great.
So it's kind of charming in that way. It's very modest, you know. It really doesn't try and overstretch itself in any way. It's almost very kind of plain and very simple. But I think that's what makes it work.
Oh, I'm so glad that the translation worked because I haven't checked it. But great, because sometimes it's hard to translate local. I'm pretty sure something was lost during translation, as it is always, but I'm so happy that it worked.
And he wrote the original in Turkish, was it, or...?
He wrote originally in Turkish, but there is an Armenian version of this book, and he wrote that too. So he both write in two languages.
Right.
So there was no translation between the Turkish and Armenian one.
And Azaras, are there any more kind of English language translations in the pipeline, or was this just a one-off?
I don't know. We have no plans right now, but if we get offers like this, so we'll give you the copyright and you just give us the translation, we'll work together. I think we might do something like that, because there's like no manpower to do that. We can of course give the book to translation, but we just like to, we wouldn't know who to trust. We wouldn't know who to trust in the translation, and then we don't know who would edit the book. Here, just because we know the Gomidas people, we just have to go along with that. But other than that, us making a decision going that direction in English publishing is like a big decision that I don't know if we would right now.
And just going back, you mentioned there back in the 90s when Aras was setting up, and you were kind of affiliated with Agos as a newspaper. I mean, are you still closely affiliated with Agos? I mean, what kind of work do you do together?
We can't say we're professionally affiliated more than any publishing house and newspaper would be. So they have Agos Kirk, the book. What do you call that?
Supplement.
Yeah. And we send them some articles sometimes, or they ask book. We send them books every new book. But of course, they're our friends. I mean, I have worked in Agos for almost 3 years on the culture and art pages. So, of course, they're our friends. They are people that we know. I mean, there are only like 40,000 Armenians living in Istanbul. So they're people that we went to school together, or that are friends from neighborhood or anything. But other than that, there are no professional affiliation between the newspaper and the publishing house.
And obviously, just to conclude, we were kind of talking a bit before about this is a pretty turbulent landscape at the moment to be working in. There's kind of many unpredictable political shifts. Just wonder if in recent years, I mean, have you experienced any particular difficulties or surprises in terms of the political atmosphere? Just comment a bit about that aspect, just to conclude.
Yeah, of course. I think in situations like the most fragile groups would be, I think, always the minorities. They feel themselves most unsafe. So, of course, we feel that way too. The recent years have been, of course, very promising. We had books in our schedule that we were confident about publishing them. And of course, now, as everyone does, we sometimes censor ourselves or think twice before we publish a book. We're not sure if we should do what we're doing sometimes. But we try not to think about those things. We know we're confident that we're not doing anything wrong. But as I said, I think it's not only a publishing house problem. It's more of being an Armenian. This is my feeling. My friends feel the same way. My friends who have nothing to do with publishing feel the same way. I know my minorities, like Greeks, feel the same way. It's So we just wait this to calm down, and we just focus on our work, I guess. That's the only thing we can do, really. So we just try not to think about what can go wrong or what can go bad.
That was Laura Sutter. Many thanks to her. We mentioned Zabel Yesayan earlier in the conversation there, and we actually published a podcast on her back in November 2016. So if you want to listen to that, I've put a link up at armstrongwilliam.wordpress.com, as well as a link to my Hurriyet Daily News review of Mygdiç Margosyan's Infidel Quarter, which we talked about in this conversation. Before you sign off, I just want to flag up something that I'm sure you'll be interested in. It is the Bosphorus Review of Books. If you've not already heard of it, it's the only English language literary magazine magazine in Turkey at the moment, and it's coming up to its first anniversary in January 2018. It's published every couple of months online, and they have, I think, published 6 editions so far. They aim to introduce emerging writers of poetry and fiction, centered in Istanbul, connecting the literature of Turkey and the world. I think they're also in the process of planning their first ever print edition, which is certainly something to look forward to. Check them out at bosphorusreview.com, and they also have a Facebook page, so check that out too. All their back issues are free to read, and if you look carefully, you should even be able to find an interview with myself in one of those old editions, which is very exciting. On a separate note, remember that as Turkey Book Talk listeners, you can support the podcast and get a 33% discount plus free delivery by purchasing any one of 5 books from Hearst Publishers as part of a special offer. To check out the books available, visit the special page created for the deal, hearstpublishers.bigcartel.com. Another way to support the podcast more directly is via my Patreon account, making a small or large pledge on a per episode basis. Many thanks to my current Patreon supporters, Celia Jocelyn Kerslake, Michelle Zimmer, Jan Marcus Vommel, Steve Bryant, Aaron Ataman, Max Hoffman, Andrew McDowell, Paul Levin, and Tan Tunala. Also, please do rate or review Turkey Book Talk on whatever platform you listen on, which really does help increase awareness of it for other potential listeners. Follow via Twitter or like the Facebook page to stay updated with new episodes, and email recommendations, feedback, or abuse to williamjohnarmstrong@gmail.com. But until our next episode in a couple of weeks, thank you very much for listening.